But we're very happy to begin our program this evening with a report from Dan Beaton. Dan is the International Communications Director with the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C., and has been following quite closely the very controversial and now contested election in the nation of Honduras in Central America. And we're very happy Dan can be here tonight to provide an update. Dan, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Before we get to the current situation in Honduras, maybe you could tell our audience a bit about the group you work with, the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, we've been around since 1999, and we have a international and a domestic focus. I think you've had our co-directors on before, Dean Baker and Mark Weisbrot, respectively. And, yeah, I work on the international team, and we spend a lot of time looking at the policies of the IMF, the World Trade Organization, U.S. trade policy, as well as alternative economic policies, such as those that are being pursued by some countries in Latin America. And we find it very interesting to look at how those countries are doing with these different kinds of policies.
Well, we've invited you to talk about the Honduras election, and we know from an interview we did with one of your colleagues recently all about the fact that there is a context for the election that occurred November 24th, a coup d'etat that was committed in 2009 that overthrew the democratically elected president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya. His wife was contesting the election in a week ago Sunday's election. And the official results came in where Juan Orlando Hernandez of the ruling National Party was declared the winner, 37-29%, with some, I think, six other minor parties getting the rest. But that election result has been contested by Xiomara Castro and her husband, Manuel Zelaya, the ousted president. But, Dan, maybe you can sort of provide some details there that I just glossed over to give us a better feel of what happened on Election Day a week ago Sunday.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, if, you know, first of all, I was live blogging it all day, and I was getting reports from on the ground, you know, people who were throughout Honduras, mostly North Americans, telling me what they were seeing in real time, and then I'd post that on the blog as well as I was monitoring media and social media, including the Twitter accounts of the candidates, things like that, just trying to keep up in real time as much as I could with what was going on. And what I was hearing was really disturbing. There were a number of incidents of violence and intimidation, both, you know, the day before the elections and then throughout Election Day itself. A lot of cases of intimidation against the Libre Party, whom you just mentioned, of Xiomara Castro de Zelaya, and especially, and just a lot of irregularities that people were seeing, and in some cases documenting with photos and video, which we link to on the blog. So it was not a clean election, and I think it's very important for your listeners to know that it was an election that took place in the context of very disturbing violence, including the killings of 20 members of the Libre Party in the current election cycle, which is from May last year up through Election Day.
So maybe you can speak to the players here. Tell us a bit about the conservative candidate, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was declared the official winner of the election on November 24th. What are his connections to the coup that overthrew the leading candidate to oppose Hernandez, Xiomara Castro? What's his relationship to the coup d'etat that overthrew Manuel Zelaya?
Well, he supported the coup, and he's been the head of the Congress. And he's one of the, you know, his main platforms is the military police, which is an idea that he really championed through Congress, and they actually started deploying these forces ahead of the elections in October. He deployed 1,000 military police to Tegucigalpa and San Pedro Sula, which are the two largest cities in Honduras. And that's very disturbing, and not too surprisingly, I think there were incidents that show that they're politicized. They raided the home of a Libre activist, and they raided the home of a trade union leader, you know, for example. And then up until Election Day, you know, we saw them threatening international observers and Libre activists and so on. And, you know, number of disturbing reports. So that's, yeah, that was really what he was putting forward as his main campaign position, was this military police force that he wants to use, he says, to tackle the crime and the drugs, the drug trafficking going on in the country, the gang problem. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that Honduras is currently the murder capital of the world. I mean, it is very serious, and this is a situation that has really gotten out of control since the coup. Honduras' institutions really kind of collapsed after the coup d'etat, and that's why you've seen violence skyrocket. And, you know, but it's also worth remembering some of the violence is political in nature, and these killings that we've seen over the last 4 years include a lot of murders of people who opposed the coup, includes murder, a lot of, you know, disproportionately killings of women of the LGBT community have gone up. There's been a huge rise in killings of lawyers and journalists and so on. So it's a very disturbing situation.
We're speaking with Dan Beaton. He's International Communications Director with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And we're talking about the presidential election that occurred in Honduras two Sundays ago, an election that has emerged as a contested affair. Right now, with the leading candidate having been declared the winner, and the runner-up, Xiomara Castro, the wife of ousted President Manuel Zelaya, contesting that election. Before we get to the particulars of how the folks who are accusing the powers that be with fraud here in this election, Dan, maybe you could tell our listeners a bit about Xiomara Castro and the platform that she was running on.
Well, yeah, so as opposed to Juan Orlando Hernandez, whom we were just talking about, and his military police, Xiomara really wants to tackle the crime problem with community policing. And, you know, this is a idea that actually has been implemented, you know, in one form in Nicaragua with very impressive results. You know, the homicide rate in Nicaragua, for example, is just a tiny, you know, it's a fraction of what it is in Honduras. And, I mean, I've even, you know, I've heard people very close to the U.S. intelligence and military establishment, you know, have good things to say about it. You know, this is under the current government of Daniel Ortega. So, you know, that's quite a contrast she has. You know, in terms of some of her other policies, it's a little harder to say exactly what she's planning to do. I mean, she was talking about a new IMF agreement. So she's not necessarily this leftist boogeyman or boogeywoman, I guess would be more appropriate, that a lot of the media and people on the right, you know, would make her out to be. You know, it's not all very clear that her policies, economic policies and so on, would necessarily be really that left, especially when compared to some of the countries in South America.
What happens next, Dan? Maybe you could. What are the specific evidence that the Xiomara Castro, her husband, and the Libre Party have that this election was stolen? What have they presented thus far to sort of justify their contention that massive fraud had been committed?
Well, what they're saying is that there's a big number of tallies from the voting centers that do not match up with the official results being reported by the electoral authority. And so you basically, you had 5,000 voting centers throughout the country, and within those are mesas or tables where people would actually vote. And each of those tables is supposed to report a tally sheet, and that's and the electoral authority would, you know, they're actually posting their, what they say were the transmitted digitized versions of the tally sheets online, you know, the results of those. But when compared, you know, with the actual tally sheets people had seen, there are a number of cases where they didn't match up. So that's what they're talking about. And we're, you know, to add to the concern, you know, as I mentioned before, I mean, there were numerous irregularities reported on Election Day. And I have to point out, because I think it's very hard for people to understand this from the U.S. media accounts of the election, is that you had the European Union and the Organization of American States down there, the most prestigious of the electoral observation delegations, and as well as you had other delegations, including the National Lawyers Guild. You had a delegation of trade unions, which included members of the AFL-CIO and the largest trade union confederation in Brazil. You had the Honduras Solidarity Network, which, you know, is more of a grassroots kind of electoral observation group that had almost 170 people from the United States and Canada down there. And all these delegations were reporting some of the same things, and one of them was that there was credential buying going on. How this relates to the tallies is that each political party, of which there were nine, is supposed to have a representative in each voting center. And what most often these delegations, these observers, were saying is that the national party was buying the credentials of some of the smaller parties in these voting centers. So you could conceivably have situations where you have some voting centers where the national party, instead of having their one representative, might have four or five or something like that. And then sometimes the Libre representative, you know, the Amara Castro's party, might not be in there because they were kept out. They were intimidated, or they were intimidated into turning over their tally sheet. These are all things that were reported. You know, these are all things that people witnessed. And so that's a very disturbing situation, and that's why there's so much concern that this be taken seriously and be reviewed by the electoral authorities.
From what I understand, there was a massive demonstration in the capital of Tegucigalpa on the one-week anniversary of the election, and one of the supporters of the Libre Party, the party contesting the election, was shot dead just before the protests got underway. Can you tell us the latest of what we know in terms of unrest in Honduras as a result of this contested election?
Well, there isn't really unrest. I mean, there was a lot of hype that there would be unrest, that there would be these violent protests and so on if the election were contested. That hasn't happened. We've seen peaceful demonstrations, really. But targeting of the Libre Party, targeting of people who opposed the coup. I mean, you know, people have to remember that after the coup, there was a massive social movement that erupted. So Honduras basically, you know, it had its spring, so to speak, you know, after that coup. And this is really a historic and I suppose unprecedented eruption of a social movement. And so the repression against that movement started back then and has continued ever since. And really the Libre Party emerged out of that movement. And so the repression against the Libre Party has followed, just as it followed the repression of the social movement. So that's continued, unfortunately, even after the election, with that the latest killing that you mentioned.
What are the prospects, Dan, that the officials overseeing the election will do a vote-by-vote recount as demanded by Xiomara Castro and her husband Manuel Zelaya and the Libre Party?
Well, that's really the question. You know, that the latest news today is that the electoral authorities are saying they will review the tally sheets, which is the first thing that, in my opinion, certainly needs to happen to try to get a sense of if a vote-by-vote recount is warranted. But, you know, even with the tally sheets, it's unclear what that means. Are they going to review all of them, and are they going to review them, versus the discrepancies that the Libre Party is claiming? And, you know, again, I don't want to get bogged down in the technicalities, but, I mean, what Libre is talking about is all the political parties are supposed to get a copy of all the tally sheets. So Libre has their copies, and they're saying that what they see there doesn't match up with what the electoral authorities have reported. So in reviewing these tally sheets, electoral authorities should really look at, you know, what Libre's copy says and you know, review that and try to figure out where the error is, you know. But unfortunately, what we've been seeing is that there have been mistakes reported on the electoral authority's website, and they've been quietly correcting some of those without, you know, telling anybody. It's just, you know, some careful observers have noticed that, yeah, you know, this weird thing I noticed on this tally sheet before suddenly, or, you know, this number that didn't add up before, suddenly that's fixed, and, you know, they didn't mention it. So it's entirely possible that they might correct some of the errors, but not really deal with the discrepancies, all the discrepancies that Libre is talking about.
We're speaking with Dan Beaton. He's International Communications Director with the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C., and we're talking about the Honduran presidential election, which occurred November 24th, that election under contest right now. And, Dan, when you look at the United States' involvement here, what are your concerns, given the fact that there was much criticism of the United States in the Obama administration shortly after the coup occurred that overthrew Manuel Zelaya in 2009? What do we know at this point in terms of any kind of overt or covert interference in this election by the Obama White House?
Well, we know that the U.S. did contribute almost $11 million that we know about to this election. And that was through some entities that, you know, I have to say, have a track record of interfering in other countries' affairs, including elections in the past. You have groups like the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute, which are funded by the U.S. Congress. And so you had them down there. And these are groups that, you know, have in the past, you know, really taken sides and supported one party over another in certain ways, providing training to certain political parties and candidates and things like that. And so, you know, I think that's disturbing. I think it's also disturbing that the U.S. ambassador to Honduras, Lisa Kubiske, she kind of tried to put a good face on the election right away on election day, saying that it was a transparent and clean process. And, you know, in fact, by the time she said that, I mean, you know, there were numerous reports of irregularities all throughout the country coming in. So, you know, she wanted to put this you know, smiley face on the election. And I just think that was very premature and unwarranted. And, you know, there are a lot of serious issues here. I mean, you know, I think it's important for your listeners to know also, it's not just Libre that's saying there are problems. You have another new party called the Anti-Corruption Party, which said basically the same thing, that they found a lot of discrepancies. And, you know, so, and there, this is not a party that's politically in line really with Libre. I mean, this is actually a conservative party politically. And so you have two of the major political parties now saying there's big problems. You had all these delegations. You have people, you know, saying there were irregularities. You have people like Baltazar Garzon, the Spanish judge, you know, famous for filing the case against Augusto Pinochet. You have people like Adolfo Perez Esquivel, the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Argentina, who is there, who denounced what he said, what he called fraud and manipulation in the election. So these are all things that, you know, shouldn't be just dismissed or ignored. I mean, you know, there's some serious questions here.
Well, I appreciate you sharing some of the analysis here and some of the facts about this election and, you know, the ongoing concern about how it'll end up. You know, I know you'll be following this, and our listeners can go to your website to get some of the latest news in Honduras. You still have, although you're not live blogging what's occurring on as you did on election day, They can go to the site and get updates. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we're going to continue to follow this. We'll continue writing about it in various forms, op-eds, and probably some new blog posts as well. So, yeah, our site is cepr.net, and there's a button there right on the homepage for the America's blog, which is where people can find the live blog entry for November 24th and 25th, as well as a lot of other posts we've done on Honduras there. We have a Honduras issues page that has everything, including we did a recent paper. I think you interviewed somebody about that, you know, looking at the economic situation in Honduras since 2006 when Zelaya came in. So, you know, a lot of stuff people can find on Honduras on the site.
All right. Well, appreciate you spending time with us tonight, Dan. Thanks for all your important work there, and say hello to everybody for us. Appreciate your looking out on this corner of the world in Latin America.
All right, definitely.
You guys
will.
Do.
Yeah, thanks, and thanks for having me on.
Take care, Dan. Bye-bye.
All right, you too.
That's Dan Beaton, International Communications Director with the Center for Economic and Policy Research.